Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we will look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin in a moment and talk with a friend and colleague of Congresswoman Giffords, who, like her, has felt the ugly fury of the Tea Party up close and personal. Congressman Bob Filner joins us to recall the night when he was recently re-elected by a wide margin when his Tea Party opponent led a mob that besieged Congressman Filner's office on election night, cursing and threatening him in front of his terrified family, shouting Jew and traitor. We will speak about this as well as the president's speech last night that called for more civility in our political discourse. Then we'll be joined by Dr. Robert Edgar, the former six-term congressman, now the head of the nation's leading campaign finance reform organization, Common Cause. He was also the head of the National Council of Churches, so we'll ask him why House Speaker Boehner did not attend the memorial in Tucson, but instead was at a fundraiser, and whether the president can be both a political and a moral leader of a polarized country. Then we will be joined by presidential historian Alan Lichtman to examine the power and influence of presidential rhetoric and where Barack Obama's speeches stand in the pantheon of presidential addresses that have survived through the ages, even if at the time they were not appreciated or had little effect. Then finally, we will examine the political crisis in Lebanon following the collapse of the Lebanese government that happened while the president, whose father was allegedly murdered by Hezbollah, was visiting the White House. We'll be joined by Thanisis Cabanis, the author of A Privilege to Die, Inside Hezbollah's Legions and Their Endless War Against Israel. He has an article in today's New York Times, Hezbollah's Latest Suicide Mission. Congressman Filner, thank you so much for joining us today on Background Briefing.
Thank you. And, of course, we're still very concerned with Gabby Gifford's recovery. From all accounts, it's proceeding, but I think we still have to keep her in our thoughts and prayers.
Well, that was quite a moment last night where the president announced that she'd opened her eyes for the first time.
No question. And she had her closest friends in Congress there, Senator Gillibrand and Debbie Wasserman Schultz from Florida, that's the speaker, the former speaker, Nancy Pelosi. So I think that those friends gave her an incredible, incredible lift.
I think he did change the discourse, and I feel in a way a little off key talking about the Tea Party, but there's such a coordinated effort on the part of all of the right wing pundits, including Sarah Palin, to deny what they've said over the last couple of years. And I think it's time for them to man up, as Sharon Engel said to Harry Reid during the election debate.
The more they say, that they insist that there could be no connection between the wider climate and a deranged individual, and we can't excuse him, that itself is a political statement, because that enables them to absolve themselves of any responsibility here. And my point, not to keep an uncivil discourse going, but this cannot be seen, in my view, as an isolated incident. I mean, we had dozens of Congress people all over the country threatened. You saw some of the stuff that I went through election night and since.
By the way, I had never seen that until I saw Don Lawrence O'Donnell's show last night. And it was truly scary and disgraceful and frightening.
Right. What occurred, by the way, is that, the Tea Party folks who had known for shouting people down in those healthcare debates, when I debated my opponent, they kept shouting me down so I couldn't talk. And then after it was announced that I was in the lead on election night, about 100 of them with their signs, and they were hitting my supporters, surrounded me. And I have been in mobs before. I have been active in the civil rights movement. I've been beaten up. I know the look of violence in people's eyes, and these people were intent on violence, as you could tell. They were screaming obscene things and making reference to the fact that I was Jewish. And I think if the police had not intervened, I could have been pretty well beaten up. But what occurred the next day, and then the day after Gabby's shooting, they said, look, politics obviously doesn't work because we had the better candidate and the better issues, and this sneaky guy must have defrauded us, so we have to move to violence. And they explicitly talked about my elimination. The day after Gabby's shooting, they said, well, the revolution has begun. We're going to get all these guys, and and we'll get Filner too. So, they made explicit references. And this was going on not just in my contest and not just in Gabby's, but all over the country. It's a very terrifying thing that when a democracy literally is threatened like this.
Well, let me remind the audience, if I may. I'm speaking with Congressman Bob Filner, who represents California's 51st District, which includes much of southern San Diego, Chula Vista, National City, and all of Imperial County. In 1961, he participated in the Freedom Rides and spent 2 months in a Mississippi jail as a result. And on election night in November, he was confronted by an enraged group, including his opponent in that election, Nick Popodich. And one of the things that I think is unassailably true, and I wish somehow it could cut through, I'm getting letters saying that how dare you castigate Sarah Palin for putting targets on a map. They were surveyor's sign. All of this sort of mental gymnastics to avoid the obvious. No better authority to discuss that matter was the congresswoman herself, who back in March went on television and castigated in a very dignified way Sarah Palin and said that what she's doing is dangerous and reckless and could have consequences. And that ought to be played around the clock on the media, in my opinion.
No question. And, Justice Holmes said 50, 60 years ago that, there are limits to free speech. You cannot yell fire in a crowded theater. And I say to Ms. Palin that you cannot yell, ready, aim, fire, in a crowded political situation. We must take responsibility for our words. And the talk show guys who say, hey, we're just talking. Well, why are they on the radio? They want to influence people. And as the sheriff of Pima County said, mentally disturbed or fragile people are the most influenced by this kind of talk. It legitimizes them. It empowers them. It says it's okay to think about violence. And whether you have Glenn Beck talking about killing Michael Moore, or you have Second Amendment remedies being talked, or in my case, AK-47s being brandished and snipers being shown how to do their work, you cannot deny responsibility for a climate that is has become so harsh. And I think we all have to say, includes me and everybody, that we have to dial back. We have to take a deep breath, think about the effect of our words. Try to say, hey, the other guy or gal is not the demon or the enemy. They have different political views, and some mutual respect has got to be included there.
But Congressman Filner, do you feel, as I certainly do, and I'm on the left spectrum of the media, and frankly, we can't get arrested in commercial broadcasting. There's virtually no voices on the left in commercial broadcasting. But on the right, you've mentioned some of them, Beck, but there's Savage, Michael Savage, who has 8 million listeners and is one of the most poisonous human beings on the planet. Limbaugh, of course, has up to 20 million regular listeners who actually take political advice for him and vote his way. And of course, he's now saying that the assassin in Tucson is smiling because the Democrats are protecting him. I mean, some of the stuff is amazing, but why doesn't somebody go after the Rupert Murdochs of this world? It's like having an attack dog. The dog does what it does, but the owner is responsible for the dog.
Sure. And they're on 24 hours a day just about with, as you say, these millions of listeners. And somehow we've lost any semblance of fairness.
What is it, because of the fairness doctrine? I mean, what?
Well, I think that's part of it. Here are these guys actively promote, let's say, the Republican Party. And yet that's not we should consider that a contribution to the party that comes under the FEC rules, and because they're making millions and millions of dollars worth of free advertising, and yet there's no limit on that. I think that has got to be looked at in terms of when they specifically and openly support a party or a candidate. Why isn't that considered contributions to that candidate and therefore subject to the limits that the law suggests.
So what is your explanation, Congressman Filner? When I looked at those faces of those people screaming at you on election night, and one of them was shouting Jew and the others were – I mean, it's you don't even want to repeat what they were saying. But the level of venom and it was very disturbing, and I'm trying to understand – you know, I'm not suggesting it's because of the Beck and the right-wing echo chamber. It has to be a confluence of a lot of things. But why do these – and these look like pretty much kind of like working Americans.
Yeah, they think – you know, they are.
Well, why do they think a guy like you who is on their side is their enemy?
Well, you know, that's a good question. I think we all have to try to figure out an answer. The answer that I have was, historically, at tough times economically, the worst parts of Americans come out, and there's always a look for scapegoats. There's racism that's heightened, and we are at a very vulnerable economic time. These people are afraid. They don't have good jobs. They don't have health care. They don't have pensions, and they look and the people that they're listening to find the scapegoats. The scapegoats are the immigrants or the gays or Democrats, and yet there's a underlying racism there, I think, that says to them, hey, you got one thing going for you, you're white, which, it puts a whole level of venom in there. When they say they're losing their country, I think they say they want to take back their country. It's from those people of color who have increasing rights in our society. So I think partially it comes from that. People are scared, they're fragile, and they take simplistic answers for the problems that they have. And the Democrats, I think, have been very weak in trying to answer this. That is, we are timid, we think everybody's moved to the right, we're afraid to confront it directly and say, we have some answers and to put it in a way that these folks can understand. They really think that the country is being lost from the way they've had it, rather than to say, hey, you can participate in a much more vibrant, dynamic, multicultural future for our nation, and everybody can have a part in this. We don't glorify that, and they demonize it. And when all of government is demonized, they look at people like me, a elected official, that I am the enemy. They have Rush and those guys have so delegitimized public service that they could see us as the demons of the world.
Well, President Obama's words last night, reciting what the young girl who was killed, what she said and her belief in government service and calling upon all of us to try and make the country live up to this young girl's expectations was very appropriate. But
I thought that was the best line, excuse me, in the speech when he said we have to live up to the expectations of our children.
But just in closing, Congressman Filner, there is others have identified an authoritarian streak in the Republican Party. John Dean and Barry Goldwater Jr. wrote a book about it. I'm concerned about a kind of totalitarian streak and when you have the leader of the Senate, Mitch McConnell, literally calling for the not the physical destruction of Obama, but the destruction of his presidency, and his number one priority is to make sure he doesn't get reelected. It has a kind of Stalinist feel to it, and frankly, what they're doing now with this effort to split the working Americans between those in the private sector who've lost their jobs, lost their pension, and lost their health care, with state employees who are in states that have suffered enormous revenue collapses because of what happened on Wall Street, not because of profligate spending. Yet they're being demonized, and it seems to be an effort to break the public employees' unions because they support the Democratic Party. So I'm wondering if you've got Fox as your Pravda, and you've got Republican leaders determined to just, you know, take no prisoners and crush the Democrats or you know, whatever, then to me, this is a totalitarian one-party impulse.
I mean, I would compare it to, you know, Germany in the early 30s when Hitler, remember, came to power legally at first. And, you know, these kind of he played on their fears and inflation and the economic uncertainty and found a scapegoat in the Jews, and people followed him. And we're dangerously close to that if you look at the kinds of things that are going on. So, you know, I call upon not only, you know, the Republican leaders to say to these folks, hey, you've gone too far, and we've got to step back and work on this in a new way.
Well, Senator Udall is suggesting that at this upcoming State of the Union that the Democrats and the Republicans mix up their seating so that we'll see how that goes.
I'd be careful about knives there then.
I thank you for joining us here today in Los Angeles, Congressman Bob Filner.
Thank you for bringing up these issues. It's very important.
Thank you. Again, I was speaking then with Congressman Bob Filner, who represents California's 51st District, which includes much of southern San Diego, Chula Vista, National City, and all of Imperial County. In 1961, he participated in the Freedom Rides and spent 2 months in a Mississippi jail as a result. And as he was saying on election night back in November, he was confronted by an enraged group of the Tea Party, including his opponent in that election, led by his opponent in that election, Nick Popovich.